G'day, we hope you're enjoying our podcast. Producing a podcast is costly, both time and money. If you'd like to show your support and offer a one-off payment, even the price of a coffee or a beer, that'd be greatly appreciated and would go a long way to support us. If you'd like to leave a donation, head to the show notes of this episode and click on the Acast supporter link. Be sure to leave your message of support too. Thanks again.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In loving memory of Natalie Ward, who suddenly passed last weekend, our thoughts and prayers are with the Ward family.
This episode of Beenham Valley Road is brought to you by The Soap Bar. Full disclosure, I actually work there. I make the soap. It's a family business. And right now, we are in the factory recording this episode. They have been a tremendous support to us in this project, and really, there is no way we could bring you fortnightly episodes without their continued support. So if you're in the market for handmade natural soaps, bath bombs, scrubs, salts and creams, go to www.thesoapbar.com.au and get 20% off your purchase when you use the code BVR at checkout. We will put the details and the link in the show notes. Thanks, guys. This podcast talks about domestic violence, death. It contains adult themes and coarse language. If you need help or you are affected by such issues, you can contact your nearest help centre. Lifeline is 131114 or DV Connect 1800 811 811. Discretion is advised. The following interview is courtesy of the ABC Sunshine Coast.
You might remember a couple of weeks ago I spoke to two former Gympie police officers, Tom Daunt and Jamie Pultz, about their podcast series Beenham Valley Road. Now, it centres on the suspicious death of Woolvi woman Kira McLaughlin. Kira sustained serious injuries at her property in July 2014 and later passed away in hospital. Those injuries included serious head trauma and more than 100 bruises documented on her body. Despite her death being deemed suspicious, no charges have ever been laid against anyone. Kira's family have been calling for an inquest into her death ever since, and that call has now been heard. Peter Boyce is the Sunshine Coast lawyer representing Kira's family. I spoke with Peter Boyce just a short time ago and asked him how Kira's family is feeling at this news that a coronial inquest into her death has been granted.
Good morning. They are very happy that some action and some positive steps are now going to be taken in terms of a full inquiry as to the cause of death, which has been their main aim since she unfortunately passed on.
Peter, I know that the Courier Mail has been investigating and running stories on Kira's death in its true crime series. And just recently, as I mentioned, a couple of former police officers speaking to me about their true crime podcast, Beenham Valley Road, which again looks at what may have happened there around the investigation into Kira's death. How much do you think those different elements, difference has that made in terms of now an inquest being called for?
That's hard to say, and I don't know that that's necessarily the catalyst, because we've been in there for a long time on behalf of the family asking for an inquest and making representations, and we've had correspondence with the coroner's office where they're certainly doing some more work, and I don't necessarily think it's solely because of those matters, but let's put it this way, that can't have hurt us.
Why do you believe it's taken so long for an inquest into Kira's death to be granted?
I'm not able to say why, because we don't know. But at the end of the day, sometimes these matters take much longer than you would anticipate. And sometimes that's because the coroner gets the brief or the file from the police service, and then they review it and then ask for further investigations, or they go off and get experts' reports of their own to satisfy or provide evidence to the coroner, so that the coroner can then weigh up and make a decision about whether an inquest should be held or whether further investigation should be undertaken.
What's your understanding, Peter, of the timeline now for when the inquest might get underway?
We don't have that, because I think the coroner's office is still waiting on some more detail or some more evidence to be given to them. But the fact that the coroner has now said positively that there will be an inquest means that they're much further up the track than they were. So I'd anticipate we'll get notice in the next month or two as to when an inquest might be held.
Kira's mum, Alison, has, as you mentioned, been calling for this inquest for a long time into her daughter's death. What is she hoping will come out of it?
There are many questions raised over the cause of death, the injuries that Kira has. So we want to at least be able, as a family and on behalf of the family, to have a look at precisely what evidence there is as to how a person could have so many injuries upon them and no one being charged with any offences relating to it. It's early days, but I can tell you that mum's overjoyed by the fact that there's an inquest.
That's lawyer Peter Boyce, who's representing Kira McLaughlin's family, and as you heard there, mum overjoyed that a coronial inquest will now be held into her death. No timeline to give you in that sense, but a fantastic result given that Kira passed away very sadly in July 2014. The family have been waiting for a long time to try and find some answers.
To live in hearts we leave behind is not to die. Thomas Campbell. Much has changed since we spoke to you last. The good news, the Office of the Coroner has announced that an inquest will be launched into the suspicious death of Kira McLaughlin. It's at this point we feel we need to clear up a few technicalities around this case. For the next couple of episodes, we will be erring on the side of caution. The announcement of the inquest means that there are certain things we cannot go into, and that's fine. The rules of the game have changed slightly, and that is the best case scenario. Because now that the Office of the Coroner has confirmed an inquest will be held, it is up to the professionals to do their duty and get to the bottom of this case once and for all. Jamie and I have been somewhat selfish in our endeavours to tell you this story. If you have listened to our other episodes of this series or kept up to date with our blogs, you would know by now that we both left the police much different people to when we first were sworn in. Being given the opportunity to tell this story on behalf of Kira's family has provided a certain closure for us. And now that the proceedings have commenced to officially understand the cause of Kira's death, our faith in the power of advocacy has been somewhat restored. There are a few technicalities that we need to clarify before moving forward. This surrounds a somewhat cold, yet necessary administration that is involved in someone's death. In Queensland, Australia, someone does not necessarily have to be charged for a matter to be finalised. If police feel they have exhausted all of their avenues of inquiry with little to no result, then a case can be deemed finalised but marked as unsolved. This simply indicates that the police have done all they can to investigate and for whatever reason have been unable to commence a prosecution against an individual. Now this is all very technical, I know, but it's crucial to understand, particularly in relation to Kira. We told you from the start of this series that the story surrounding Kira's demise is complex. There are large gaps in information that are difficult to piece together. We've done the best we can to clarify this up along the way. As you have heard, we have spoken with people who were with Kira that night. We have also spoken with their friends and family. What they have told us, it's important to understand, is their opinions and recall of events. They are not official statements. When police investigate a suspicious death, they are obliged to collect as much evidence as possible. It may take them hours, days, weeks, months, or years. Sometimes the evidence is collected, someone is charged and faces court, but in other circumstances, this evidence points in a number of directions. While it is the responsibility of investigators to follow these leads, the evidence they have at hand may not be substantial enough to bring charges against a person. The outcome of Kira's case remains undetermined at this time. The purpose of an inquest is to examine the cause and circumstances of a person's death, not necessarily to determine the guilt of a party or parties involved. So to put it bluntly, there may not be one person responsible, or there may be multiple persons responsible for Kira's death, and this remains to be seen. During the week, we reached out to some of our former colleagues who were tasked with investigating Kira's death. Detective Sergeant Rob Lowry from Gympie Police was unable to provide an official comment at this time, but assured us they were doing everything they could in relation to the matter. Jamie and I are not the ones to find the person or persons responsible. Our role is to tell Kira's story and to highlight the impact on the family and community when a person's death goes unanswered. I'm Tom Daunt.
And I'm Jamie Poltz.
This has been on Valley Road, Episode 5, Missing Pieces.
I've got myself a piece of heaven. I'm gonna take you to the river. I'm gonna build it a red freeway and I'll send it home.
As Tom said before, this story has always been about a forgotten death, but the next two people certainly haven't forgotten about it. We have heard people speak about Kira's last moments and her sudden, suspicious death. Recently, I caught up with two of Kira's closest friends. Jay and Julia are probably two of the most qualified people to talk about what Kira was like as a person. Julia now lives overseas and Jay out of state, so I had to catch up with them over the phone.
Hello?
Well, hello.
How are you, Julia?
Yes. Hi, mate. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can, yes. So we have technology succeeded.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, sometimes it can be a nightmare sometimes.
It's very curious, if you ask me, why there's been nothing, why it's not been, no one's been charged, nothing's been done about it. Yeah, I know you don't be stuff like that, but, the fact that it's gone for an years without anything happening is just, it's frustrating. Alison can't get closure. It'll be hard for her kids as well. So they deserve answers.
Yeah, she can't really move on.
No. Well, I don't think she'll ever be able to move on, if I'm honest with you. Alison adored Kira. But it's at least getting answers for the kids and making sure it doesn't happen again, really. So I met Kira when I was around 10 years old. I was in Scouts, and she was also in Scouts. She was in East Gosford Cub Group, and I was in Bensville Cub Group. And we went to Gang Show together. It was a big Gang Show was a scouting and guiding musical. And we went to it, and I ran into her, and she was just this warm, bubbly 10-year-old that just introduced herself and said, "Hi, my name's Kira. I believe we're going to," and at that stage, we would say that we're going to move to the area as well. So we were relocating. She's like, "I believe we're going to get to know each other. You're going to be in my cub group." And she was just one of these people that went out of her way to make me feel special and welcomed. And I remember that even now from, 20-ish years ago. So, that was wonderful. And then we ended up being at school together as well. So I'm in the same school and in the same cub group as well. And she had her own group of friends and I had my own group of friends, but she always looked out for me. She always made sure that I was okay. She was very protective, which was always something very sweet. So that was in year five. And we were very, very close from years 5 through to year 11, I would say, when we were about 17-ish. Particularly the younger years, we always got the bus together. We did sleepovers, all the general kids sort of stuff that you would do. She was always warm. I never knew anyone that didn't like her. Some people were a little bit intimidated by her, but that's just because she wore her heart on her sleeve. So she was always out there, always talking, always very loud. That often got her in trouble with the teachers. but, you know, she always stuck up for anyone that she thought was being unfairly. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay, cool. Sorry, my computer just went dark. She always stuck up for everyone, regardless of, you know, she always went against the class bullies and stuck up against them and wasn't afraid to tell them off. So she was lovely like that. Yeah, so that was at East Gosford. So we went to East Gosford Primary School together, and then we went to Erin High School, and then she ended up going to Greenpoint Christian. I went and followed her actually for a year at Greenpoint Christian, but I decided to go back to Erin High afterwards, and she continued on at Greenpoint. So we would still see each other. She was only just down the road, so whenever she wanted to get away from her parents, she would come round, and whenever I wanted to get away from my parents, I would go round, because that's basically your teenagers. So you always want to get away from your parents at some time. So we were only about a 15-minute walk from each other. So that was always lovely.
But our relationship had many different variations over the years. A best friend, we dated a little bit in our earlier sort of teens, and then...
That's Jay. He now lives in New South Wales and was one of Kira's best friends during high school.
It became like a brother-sister family. Like, I was very much a part of her family. And still am. Still am very much. She was a very caring, very giving person. She was one of a kind, that girl. One of a kind. Yeah, definitely. No, as I said, saying before, that you go, the podcast, it's been great. It's been great and enlightening for everything that's needed to come out. And look, I won't deny, like, and Alison's mentioned that as well, Kira was feisty. Like, she was feisty and she was vivacious, but she was charismatic and kind and funny and genuine. Like, she was, as I said, one of a kind. Like, what you saw was what you got. Like, it wasn't, there was no falsity to Kira, but she was passionate. So if she was in a situation or an environment and she was, the podcast, as I said, I think was great, but it was kind of, I would not say she was overly aggressive unless if the passion of the situation required it, if that makes sense. I used to always, again, knowing someone from such a young age and then watching them grow into a teenage girl, into an early 20s girl, into a mother, like, it was interesting to watch her personality progressions and her change. But she loved her kids. She loved the idea of giving them a great life and seeing life again through them and enjoying life for them, like, as you do with little kids. So, she was a. Many people have said it to in comments and things on that she had sort of a smile that was like sunshine, and in like she was just a very charismatic, friendly, happy person. So, I want to make sure that she's sort of known for what she was. She was clumsy is probably my most other thing for her. Was incredibly clumsy, the clumsiest person I've ever met. Clumsily covered in bruises and banged up toes and knocked off toenail and things because she was just clumsy. As I said, from young, we spent a lot of afternoons after primary, like we'd go from primary school to her house or she'd come around to my house in the afternoon. It got to a point where I'd always usually come to hers because, like, if Alison was working or stuff, again, in a sibling kind of relationship, we would go on adventures. Our friends all lived around, so we'd finish primary school and walk to friends' houses and then go home because, you know, we're blessed. We live in the generation that we could go and play and be home by the lights in the street being down.
Yeah.
So it was just, we spent all that time together pretty much. So, and then as I said, family holidays, like grandma took us up to Queensland. She had to go up to work she used to go up and buy clothes because she had a clothes shop and took Kira up, but she'd go, well, I'll bring Jay because otherwise it's just Kira. So it's kind of, again, we were siblingy, like we got there and went to all the theme park together. So, it's lifelong friendship. So it was, we could talk to each other about anything and everything. Because we knew everything and everything about each other. The house was smashed up. When we got to the house, there was fist marks of the walls everywhere. All the furniture was smashed. Like, it was just...
Oh, so you went there.
It was very clear. Yeah. So I was in Melbourne, so I got... My phone is always on silent. I'm one of those annoying people.
I know them well. Yep.
Yes, because it's I'm always in meetings, so you just always sort of just end up living on silent. But I woke up in the morning at Melbourne at about 7 o'clock to a missed call from Alison at 2 a.m, and I went instantly. My gut was ill because the comment I made earlier was kind of one of the last things I said to Kieran in our last phone conversation was, "What will it take for him to kill you for you to leave the situation?" And she went, "Jay, you're being really dramatic, and I just wouldn't need to stop talking about it because." You're making it bigger than what it is. So I'll talk to you later. And that was our last phone conversation.
That was dead set, the last phone call.
Yeah. So it was very kind of hard to go. That was a harsh thing to say to your best friend for the last time for it to then be through. But when I saw the missed call from Alison, my stomach sank. My partner was getting ready for work. And I was like, oh my God, I listened to the voice message and went, I'd seen it and stuff. And I listened to the voice message on the drive into work and went, instantly called my partner and was like, okay, this is what happened. Rang Alison, was trying to get hold of her because obviously she was out doing stuff. And then we got straight onto a flight. So I got to work, told my work what happened when I need to go. So my partner and I bought a flight up, landed up there straight away and just sort of hung with Alison at the airport, at the hospital. And then obviously when we went back up for the funeral, we went to the house and... No, because we would have seen the house before that. So it would have been when we're up there, we must have went to the house. So I saw the house all broken, all smashed. So, it would be around, we must have gone up when we came up from the hospital. But it was just visiting up. It was just hectic. It was such a blur again because it was to get that phone call to kind of go, she's in hospital and it's not looking great. It was just get up as quick as we could. And thank God my partner at the time, because I was just on the phone to Alison, we were just like, this is not happening. And he had completely organised flights and got everything sorted and met me at the airport and it was just all sorted and we jumped on and went up. So it was just like punch holes all through the walls. Like it was just punch hole marks, red paint all through everywhere. Like it was just bits of red paint everywhere, which was just off-putting because it was obviously kind of remnants of something else. So it just kind of had a kind of eerie feel to see such a, like, Akira always kept a knife out. She wasn't the tiniest person. She never was from a young age. And four kids is a bit of a handful, but it was kept very well for pretty much single mum with the four kids. But
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, it was just to see it kind of smashed and damaged and paint and things. It had an eerie kind of feel, like a really horrible feel to it.
Did you see Kira at the hospital?
I did, yeah. So we stayed at the hospital for the whole time. So I was there with Alison. Again, being nearly like family, I think Alison would easily refer to me as her son in a degree. So we were just there for the whole time. So I sat next to her. Same boat as I think Alison mentioned in hers. We have our own little times and sit there and chat with her because Alison had told us as well that essentially her nursing background and stuff, that if she can still potentially hear her. So it was good times to just kind of sit around with her and kind of chat, if that makes sense. But also sad to see her laying there with a bruised, smashed up face. And like it was bizarre. And surreal. It was, as it all just kind of happened, none of us really slept. It was just kind of standing around just talking, going, this is surreal. Like, this is not happening. And kind of expecting that she's going to wake up. Like, we're just going, okay, something will happen and she'll come out. But
so you didn't think you didn't think she was going to die?
No, it was very clear. And Alison, again, nursing background, it was told to us that it was, that was what was happening. She was completely brain dead. So it hadn't sunk in that more sense of going, this can't be happening. She's got four kids the kids shouldn't have to live without their mum. And And she was a good person. And again, not saying that there's bad people who deserve it. Like, it's not that. Like, but she was a great person. So it was just someone gone way too soon.
It was up to Jay to pass the tragic news on to Kira's extended friendship group. He sent the following text to Julia.
And essentially it was the very first message in July 2014. Hi, Julia. Very sad news. Kira has passed away. She has separated with her husband and has been seeing someone new for about 9 months. She was brain dead on arrival Thursday afternoon from a serious injury to the back of the head. Was phoned to Gold Coast Hospital. We got there yesterday and she has donated her organs to urgent requirement. For the funeral, I personally, and that's one of my biggest regrets, it's not making it for the funeral. I should have flown back. I didn't, and I, to that day, I still regret it. I really wish I'd been there.
Well, you were in London.
Yeah, I was in London, but I feel horrible that I didn't do it, if I'm honest.
So now you have heard from two of Kira's closest friends, but both of them can't help but think there are missing pieces to this puzzle. Like us, they have found it hard to match all the moving parts of Kira's situation leading up to her death together.
Just before this episode aired, Genevieve, one of Kira's best friends growing up, reached out to me. This is my conversation with her. Again, Genevieve was worried that the public might perceive Kira in a bad light. But she wanted people to know who she really was, the Kira that Genevieve knew, the loving, loyal friend that Genevieve knew.
So obviously my name's Genevieve and I was one of Kira's best friends when we were in high school together. So I met her in year nine. We both started school on the same day. We actually hated each other when we first met each other because I think we were quite alike in some ways and so we sort of didn't really mesh that well, and I remember her actually coming up to me once and saying, I don't like you for these reasons, and I turned around and I told her exactly the reasons that I didn't like her too, and then the next day we were just best friends after that. She was really more than like a best friend to me. She was like my sister, and even my little brother and my little sister say the same thing about her. She was, you know, always at my house and always with our families, and if we were doing something as a family, my dad would be like, do we need to pick Kira up or is she going to meet us there? So she was just sort of, you know, part of the family. Like, I remember one time we would have been about 18 or 19, and I went down to Sydney with my family and Kira had stayed the night at our house, and we got home because mum and dad had been like, we're going to get KFC for lunch tomorrow, and it was, you know, really exciting because we didn't have our own money. We couldn't buy it whenever we wanted. And we got home after, you know, we'd left Kira asleep at home, and we got back and she was still there, and she came out and she was like, so where's the KFC? Like, that's just the kind of person, the way that she fit into my family. Straight into it, yes. Yeah, she was great. And I remember, yeah, sorry. I was 15.
So what was that? Was that at Greenpoint Christian College, was it?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And when was the last time you saw Kira?
I saw Kira. I would have been 22 or 23, I think. She was already living in Walvi. I think she had three of her kids by that point. When she married and when she moved away, I didn't get to talk to her as much as I, you know, would have liked to, or as much as I used to before. But she came down one weekend. She actually came down two weekends in a row, and I spent like pretty much all Friday and Saturday night with her. And we went out and just, you know, did what young girls do. And we had a really good time. So I remember it being around my birthday because she bought me a DVD of True Blood, and she gave it to me opened, and she was like, I'm really sorry, I couldn't help myself. But yeah, so it would have been, I think I was 23 the last time that I saw Kira.
So how would you describe her as a person, as a friend?
Yeah, she was like the most loyal person that you ever met in your life. She, you know how people say she's the kind of person who'd do anything for you. She would literally do anything for you. And sometimes even if you didn't want her to, she'd still do it. But she was just like, she was just funny. She was cool. Like, she was just a cool girl. She didn't really care what anybody thought about her. She was just, you know, loud and out there. She was always so full of life, and she was really dry and really blunt, so it could put people off if they didn't know her that well. But she had an absolute heart of gold, and she was like a fantastic mum. Like, just watching her the first time that I got to meet her son, or sorry, the second time I met her oldest son, and I just, you know, saw the way that she looked at him, and it just being a mum, like, really changed her. It made her kind of softer, I think, in a way. But I could just tell, like, how much she loved him. But yeah, she was just Kira. Like, I know it sounds really silly, but it's really hard to put into words what she was, because she was just so many different things. And some of them were good and some of them were bad. But, I mean, yeah. She
was, are we all?
Sorry, yeah, we are. Yeah. We are. I even said, like, at her memorial service, I was privileged enough to get to speak. And, you know, I remember saying that when people die, you tend to focus on the good things and you don't think about the bad parts of them. But with Kira, she was just so herself that all the good things and the bad things were kind of indistinguishable, because she was just never anybody but herself.
Mm. So you didn't see her for a good 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think
3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it was about that. Like, I used to, she would call me and we'd, you know, constantly be in touch. I spoke to her about 2 weeks before she passed away. So that was the last time I spoke to her. But, you know, the last time I actually saw her was quite a while before she passed away.
And did Kira ever share with you any hopes or futures or dreams or anything like that with you? You know, growing up, did she say she wanted to be something or
she wanted to be a firefighter. That was something that she'd always wanted to be. She also, when we were in high school, she wanted to be a mechanic. So she actually, was it year 10, I think, or year 11, she spent one day being an apprentice mechanic, and it didn't last very long, but she wanted to be a mechanic. But then after that, she really wanted to be a firefighter. Yeah, that was her passion. And she always used to say, you know, if she ever wanted to change her name, I don't know why, but she would call herself Jamie P. Sullivan after Sully from Monsters, Inc. So I always thought that was quite a funny little thing about Kira. She was definitely a character.
So is the only reason that you dropped out of contact with her, like, physically, I know you spoke to her on the phone, but physically, because you were up different states?
Yeah, I lived in New South Wales, on the Central Coast. Where we both grew up, and when she moved to Walvi, that's literally the only reason that I didn't see her.
Had you been to her house on Beenham Valley Road?
No, I hadn't. I'd heard about it, so she came down to see us, and we all went out, like, my group of school friends, and she told us all about it and how excited her and her husband at the time were to buy this house. You know, she said as soon as she walked into the house, into the property, it felt like home, and she was just like, she was literally so happy and so excited to be living in that place, and she wanted to raise chickens and, you know, start a little farm and have whatever animals she could there. So she said to me that she loved living in Walvi and that she loved that house.
And that's where her life ended too.
Yes, it is where her life ended.
So where were you when you got the phone call, or how did you find out that Kira had been hurt or died?
I was actually at a baby shower for a really good friend of mine. I'd had about 5 missed calls from a friend of ours. Alison didn't have my new mobile number, so she called a school friend of ours, and I called them back because I thought, you know, it's strange that they... I have 5 missed calls from this friend, and she said to me, she was like, I've got something to tell you, but where are you? Are you with someone? I said, yeah, I'm at a baby shower. I've got a couple of friends here. And she was like, I can't tell you them. It's not the right time. And I said, no, like, you called me and I need to know why he's called. And I didn't know it was Kira, but I knew obviously it was something bad. She just said that that Kira was dead. And I didn't really react. I just sort of hung up and I went back into the room where the baby shower was, and I sat down and I said to my friend, I have to go. And she said, what's wrong? And I don't really remember this, but she said I stopped breathing for a second, and she kind of she like grabbed my hands and she shook me and she said, what's wrong? And I just said, you know, my friend died. So she was like, yeah, come on, let's go. And it was really she drove me, so I was living on the Central Coast then, and she drove me halfway to meet my parents. And when my parents got out of the car, my mum said, I know you don't want to hear this, I just have a really bad feeling that somebody did this to her. I think that somebody hurt her. And then my friend said, you know, I just had this bad feeling that it was her partner. And these were two people who didn't know Kira. They didn't, I mean, my mum knew Kira. But my friends that I was with, she didn't know Kira. They both just said, you know, I'm really sorry, I just have this bad feeling. And then the friend that had dropped me off, she actually called me when I got home, because it had started, you know, it started to be stories about an unnamed female in Queensland who'd been beaten to death. And she said, I think that this might be your friend. And then I went to see all my school friends that night. We just, you know, sat around crying and thinking about Kira. And that's when they told me that is what happened. Because my friend who'd called me to tell me that Kira died, she didn't want to tell me on the phone, because she, you know, she found it really hard to find the words to say what had happened. It's a horrible story. You just hear about it happening, but you don't think that it's going to happen to someone that you love, and especially not someone like Kira. Someone so young, someone who's been such a huge part of your life, and that you really loved and that really loved you back. You just, you don't think it's going to happen to you.
In an attempt to summarise the events we have pieced together an approximate timeline, we feel that it's important at this stage of the series to start to bring together the events from the people we have heard from so far. Keep in mind, the information we have gathered is some 5 years after the actual event and may not be the same information provided to police at the time of Kira's death. The time leading up to Kira being taken by ambulance has not been verified and is based on the hearsay of the people we have spoken with so far. The time following Kira's collection by ambulance is pieced together from the autopsy, police report and hospital notes from both the Gympie Hospital and Gold Coast University Hospital. These were provided to us by Alison. So here's what we've got. As you may recall from our interviews with Tamika and Alison, on Wednesday, 16 July 2014, at a time unknown, Kira and Jason drive to Mount Tambourine to pick up Tamika. They continue on to Gympie, as described by Tamika, where Jason attends court for an unrelated matter. They then have lunch at a pub somewhere in Gympie, play pokies, and then proceed to go shopping with their winnings. Then they return to Kira's home at Beenham Valley Road. We know that Kira spoke with her ex-partner on her mobile at 6:49 p.m. This was to allow her to speak with her kids. We have been told that the altercation between Kira and Tamika occurred at around 8 p.m. At about 8:30 p.m., Alison confirmed that Kira's ex-partner replies to a message from Kira. The contents of the message we do not know as yet. At about this same time, Tamika tells us she is picked up by her mum from near Kira's house, along with Jason, her niece, and her daughter. As far as we know, Kira is now alone at home. At 8:47 p.m, Kira's ex-partner receives a call on the home phone from Kira. She is upset and crying and wants to speak with her kids. Kira calls her ex-partner again at 9:01 p.m. She is still upset. We are told the conversation centered around her anger with Jason and was blaming him for losing her children. The phone call ends at 9:27 p.m. The call is around 26 minutes in length. Jason's brother, who you are yet to hear from, tells us that he and Jason's other brother take Jason back to Kira's house sometime between 9:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. He mentions that upon arriving at Kira's house, he saw Kira in the window opening the curtains and the dogs chasing something down the side of the house. Between this time and the next morning, we have no clear timeline of the events that took place. The only mention of this gap in time is in the Gympie Hospital notes, where it is mentioned that Kira's head injury occurred at around 3 a.m. If this is correct, then the only people in the house at Beenham Valley Road when Kira suffers her head injury are Kira and Jason. That's to the best of our knowledge and based on what people have told us. Tamika's brother tells us that Jason calls him between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. on the 17th of July. Kira was not okay. He recalls hearing moaning in the background as if she was in pain. He tells Jason to call an ambulance. He tells us, after hanging up on his call, Jason then calls his mum. We do not know how long that call lasts or the contents of that call. We do know a call for an ambulance is not made until some 5 to 6 hours later. Jason reported to the police he woke at about 1:30 p.m. on the 17th of July. Reportedly, he'd found Kira had urinated the bed, at which time he pulled her from the bed, showered her, and laid her on a mattress in the lounge room. He then called for an ambulance, although it is not clear how soon after 1:30 p.m. this occurred. Further, if Tamika's brother's timeline is correct, this would indicate Jason went back to sleep after Tamika's brother's phone call with Jason some 5 to 6 hours earlier, where Kira's heard moaning in pain. The ambulance arrived at Kira's home at 2:35 p.m. She was found to have a regular heart rate, normal blood pressure, and spontaneous respiration. She had a Glasgow coma score of 6. This is commonly used scale to help gauge the severity of an acute brain injury and the level of consciousness of a person. So the lower the score, the worse the condition. Kira's Glasgow coma score deteriorated to a 3 while she was being transported to Gympie Hospital when she arrived by ambulance at 3:23 p.m. As mentioned previously, she was then transferred to Gold Coast University Hospital by CareFlight helicopter due to a lack of CT scanning facilities at Gympie. She arrived at Gold Coast University Hospital at 11:03 p.m. where she underwent CT scans. She was subsequently declared brain dead and the decision was made to donate her organs. At 4:25 p.m. on the 18th of July 2014, a forensic pathologist attended the intensive care unit of Gold Coast University Hospital for the preliminary examination of Kira's body prior to organ harvesting. On the 21st of July 2014 at 11:25 a.m, the doctor performs the autopsy of Kira's body, the contents of which we summarised for you in episode 2. Kira's body is then re-examined on the 22nd of July 2014, with many of the injuries unchanged. The neuropathology report is compiled on the 5th of August 2014.
You may have heard the trailer for this episode. We had a bloke named Sean on there talking about his relationship with Kira when he was 17. Due to the news of the inquest, we have decided to keep his interview for next episode.
Hey guys, just letting you know, next Shakeout episode, we'll be doing a Q&A, question answer. So if you have a question for us, we will try and answer it. You can submit your questions to our email, which is info@610mediagroup.com. That's 610 as in S-I-X, the number 10, mediagroup.com. Also our Facebook and Instagram, you can direct message us there. Don't forget to include where you're from. That'd be great. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Beenham Valley Road is a 610 Media production. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by myself, Tom Daunt, and Jamie Pultz. Audio engineering by Johnny Powell. Our theme song, Peace of Heaven, is by Pete Allen Music. You can find him in Apple Music, SoundCloud, and all social media platforms. Our cover art photo was taken by Joel Pultz. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review Beenham Valley Road. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and also read our weekly blogs at 610mediagroup.com. Floating over the world.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.